a beautiful piece of property, and I imagine the structure will be gorgeous, and all. But if they could just move these people out, it would do some good.
Was talk at one time in the early 50s of moving City Hall out toward right up here near Wardlow.
Ray Bliley and Ray Nettie's Market and a number of them fought for that. And in a way, I think it was, we had property downtown, so I wasn't too interested in that. But on the other hand, I felt that they were right.
Mm-hmm.
That it should have been not down there with all the clutter, you know, all the everything else going on. It'd be better if it had its own park out and then let the attorney's offices and everything build up around and bigger and, you know, satellite things.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so they built it right down there.
Were you involved at all with the design when they built the
new
City Hall and the library?
The City Hall now, and the library now, the courthouse I did.
Yeah.
And I didn't have anything to do with that.
Well, that was another thing, those arguments about having a library downtown and, you know, how much it should be moved more to the center of the city so people could have access to it.
Right. And, but no. Why, you know, I don't know.
No. I don't know what the power structure was doing.
Yeah, that time.
Influential.
Yeah.
Well, you became associated with the university and became a master plan landscape architect. When was that, about in the 60s?
I don't know. I've often wondered. I look back, and it's in the 70s. I have a feeling it was around 73, but I don't know for sure.
Well, that university campus was growing, developing.
Oh, yeah. It's only supposed to be for 5,000 people at its original, when Hugh Gibbs was master planning it. And that's why it was all up on the hill.
Oh.
Yeah. It was just nice. Mm-hmm. Occidental or Pomona School right there, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's why. And so all at once, everybody wanted to go to Long Beach State. And so that's how it got started the way it was, you know. And then there was no place to go but start going down the hill. Then Dr. Hahn came, they were ready to put an administration building up there. Right on the corner, on 7th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely not. And so that's why it's down below. And he says, we've got to get these people spread out around here. And now the music complex has moved clear out there in Atherton. And so we're using the land much more efficiently, I think, and better, and certainly better for the students. So we have the North Campus, and then we have the South Campus. So now they're building a great big library down below, which is all computerized, I guess, right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It started out to be just a nice little building. It's a big building. It'd be beautiful. It'd be great.
Well, what do you do when you draw up a master plan? I mean, you have to integrate.
You should take the whole campus and decide. And of course, this is pretty much done by the campus architect, but in cooperation with him. Then you kind of decide what kind of palette you're going to use. And you pretty much stay to the same general run of plant materials, and you don't vary an awful lot. There are new plants that come along, and so you use those and so on, but the campus, when it was first built, of course, there wasn't a tree on the place. And And then even later in the 70s, early 70s, when Red Killingsworth said, he had asked a lot of students around as he was walking around the campus, what is your impression of this campus? What are you going to take away with you? And almost always it was, well, we've got a lot of red brick buildings. And there aren't any trees, you know, to speak of. And so that's when we started in getting these groves of eucalyptus going. And so the eucalyptus has been, the citrivora has been the dominant tree, and then the flowering peach, and of course the pines, and so those three are the mainstays of the campus, you might say. But you always have to think about low maintenance and as low as you can keep it, and it's still higher than it probably should be. But our parking lots, for example, instead of just having a sea of asphalt, we put in about every 10 spaces, we've got a tree up. People can't believe that. Is that a parking lot over there, you know? And of course, it's the maintenance is terrible, the litter of the leaves and everything, but that doesn't bother me a bit, having those leaves around in the ground. In fact, it takes away from the asphalt, you know? And the state system, in their great wisdom, whenever they have to cut down, well, then they cut down on painters and gardeners, janitors, you know. So we've got people out there trying to do work that two people used to do in sweater, you know. Maybe it's not quite that bad, it's almost. And then when you build a building, well, now you don't need so many people because you've covered up the land with the building. Well, it's the other way. It's more intensive afterwards. Before, it was just bare grass. Mm-hmm. And you have a gang mower that mows it, you know. Now, you can't do it that way. So you actually need more people every time you build a building. But no, you don't do it that way. So you just have to work with the ground superintendent, and I try to give him my drawings first before we present it and say, okay, you're having to take care of this. What do we do? You know? And so he makes suggestions. This works easier to edge or up, you know. And so sometimes design gets in the way of maintenance function, but or maybe sometimes maintenance gets in the way of design. And so you have to balance those out. But I think it's just the continuity of in master planning. Like they're supposed to use the same brick all the time out there. Except they don't make that brick anymore. They started it first. But very few people notice that. And the brick, and but that's the palette you're supposed to use. And in designing the buildings, you know.
Well, you have continual new building there. I mean, you mentioned the music center, and certainly that gives, and there's lots of area for building in the new international
student housing. Yeah. Well, we've still got land around to build on, and I don't know what's going to happen between Bellflower and the dorms, but now I'm afraid that big museum complex and all that Dr. Horn worked so hard on it. I have a feeling that it's gone. Terribly expensive, you know. I mean, it's only $15 million. I don't know why they couldn't get somebody to get $15 million. I have a name on it. If I had $100 million, I might give them $15 million of it. Man, we've got a new president now. I haven't met him yet, but I'm very interested in seeing what his priorities and interests are. May change completely. It may go along. Same way. I don't know.
Well, it was planned for an arboretum. What was that to be about?
Well, first, the botany department wanted a life sciences laboratory. So you'd have the botanists and the bug people and the fish people and bird people and, you know, salespeople, I suppose, of them. And it would be a place for a learning experience at, and as well as having a delightful place and use that land for something, and part of it was Indian land or burial ground or something.
Oh.
And so if we planted it, it wasn't that bad, you see.
Oh, okay. So,
but they've excavated and excavated and excavated, and they can't find it. It was, last I heard, they couldn't find anything. Now, they're right at the entrance, just this west of the new international houses. There's a plot in there that is definitely reserved as an Indian cultural site. It's a burial ground. And so you can't build on that ever, I guess, which is all right. But this Arboretum was going to be a laboratory, and I don't know. I know we've done the thing three times. And then this last time was because of the decided we're going to have this big museum complex right in the middle of it. So we've got one stage all designed, if somebody will say it's all right, and so we can get the sprinkler system going. But it's just the one phase of where it's down by the Japanese garden, the bottom of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so the botanist said thought they'd like to have the gymnosperms represented in that area, so that's fine. So it could be a lot of fun, you know. A very nice thing. And right next to it, they're going to put in next to the Japanese garden, 30 feet out from the fence, is the Bonsai Societies. They're going to put in they're paying for it all.
Oh.
And demonstration, the workshop, and they'll also build restrooms that we need very badly down in that area. Information booth and so on, and they're going to raise all this money to do this thing, and it's going to be expensive. And then we'll have the Arboretum right next to that.
Well,
so, but I don't know what the priorities are now. You know.
Well, that brings us to the Japanese garden, which is really the main purpose. Yeah, it's like a lab together. Let's talk about the background of it. Whose idea was it to build the Japanese garden?
Well, it was Lorraine's. Lorraine Miller Collins. We had known, as well, my wife's family had known, she and Lorraine and Earl way, way, way back. And then I had gotten to know her a little bit, and I'd worked at their home and been at their business out on South Street and done their landscaping and so on. So, after, and then at the hospital, Memorial Hospital, and that Memorial West that they built and gave to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she called up one day and asked me, says, you know, before Earl died, we had made arrangements for a gift to be given to the art museum, the new art museum. And it's to be a garden. And she said, I have seen the drawings from Mr. Pei, and says, I just don't know. I don't think this is what Earl would have wanted.
Are you talking about the Long Beach Art Museum?
Yeah.
Not the university.
No, this is the Long Beach Art Museum. Well, it was going to be down by the City Hall.
Yes, I see.
And so she said, would you go look at it for me. I'll pay you for your time and so on. She says, but I just don't think this is right. So I went down and looked at it, and Bob Creighton was assistant city manager then. And he showed it to me, and I looked at him and I said, Bob, this is not a garden. This isn't what Mr. Miller would have wanted. And I said, I can't imagine him putting up $250,000 for a place where there's hot dogs and things like that going on. says, well, you got this, and you got the moon gate, and you got that, got the pool. I said, yeah, you sure do. I said, but if this is I.M. Pei's idea of a garden, we should stick to his architecture and not the divine gardens. I said, you don't have enough room on this site to start with. And he said, well, sell the property we got. And I said, well, that's my problem. All I'm going to tell Lorraine is to get her money back from you. He says, you going to do that? And I said, yes, I am. I said, I'm sorry. This is what she asked me to do. And he says, you feel strong about this, don't you? And I said, I certainly do. And I felt like I was cutting my nose off, but I'd never do a job for the city again, you know. And probably so. But anyway, so I got back to her, and she says, well, thank you, Ed. And so later on, she, I don't know, I said something to her, if they could get that money back, that maybe there would be something at the university she could do in lieu of that. And I said to her, I remember Earl was not too happy with some of the things that were going on out at the university. And she said, well, maybe he'd feel different about it now. You know, this is after she'd married to Larry. And I said, well, fine. So anyway, I said, I'll just throw that out. There's the Arboretum. And so on. And so she wanted to know about the Arboretum. And Larry wanted to know how much it cost. And I said, well, I think it would cost probably $1.5 million to complete it. And he said, well, Lorraine does not have that kind of money now. I said, fine. So a few weeks later, a number of weeks later, she called me up and she wanted to know if it was possible to... She said, do you suppose the university would let us build a Japanese garden out there? And I said, I choked. I said, yes, I'm quite sure they'd be delighted. And she said, well, would you look into it for me? How much would it cost? And I says, I have no idea. I'll be the one. I don't know how much it costs. And she says, would $250,000 do any good? And I choked and said, yes, I think we could probably use that. And so I went to the president and that time, and I think it's a Macintosh thing. I don't know. Anyway, and Gentry Flynn was there and said, why, yes, you mean she wants to give this kind of money for that? And I said, yep. He said, well, let's get it, let's do it. So everything was worked out, and we picked the site and got it going and got the plans pretty well drawn up and ready to go to build almost, I think. And then we had the drought. And Larry Collins said, I met with him at their home, and he said, Ed, we just cannot go ahead with that now. He says, I'm not going to let Lorraine be subject to criticism. Here we're having waterfalls and adding more water use when we're in the midst of a drought. He says, the criticism might be too much. And he said, when this drought is over, then we'll talk again. I said, fine. So 2 years later, called up, okay, now we can get going. So that was in 78, I think. Anyway, the garden was built in 81. I think that was the date. Mm-hmm. And those two folders over there, Japanese garden, and this is the... I don't know what he had this.
Yeah, but
not you know that, okay. And so we went ahead with it, and it was a great experience to be able to do this. And one of the nicest times we had was during construction. The hills were up, and this tea house, I think, it was plastered by then, I think. But there was no water in the lake or anything. But my wife and I and my grandson picked Lorraine up and asked her, let's go have a little party over at the, and look at the place. And so we picked up about 5 o'clock, and he had some wine, and we had the crystal goblets, and the wife made some hors d'oeuvres, you know, and we brought folding chairs, and had the leader across all this rock and dirt and planks and everything, and we sat there with our sun setting in back. And really, it was a great experience. It was just as beautiful as could be. I mean, a little water but down there, and Doug would come down and drink, and she was just thrilled to death, you know. Mm-hmm. And the glasses sparkled, and, you know, it was just a lot of fun. And she said at that time, Ed, I didn't know it was going to be this big. Well, it was bigger than it should have been, I suppose. But anyway, she got a big kick out of it. And I tried to involve her in so much of this, what went on, you know, picking out the sculptures, and I talked to her about the rocks, famous rocks, and I took her to places, and I said, do you like this rock? She said, yeah, it's fine, it's another with it. Anything wrong with it? I said, go and tap it. And of course, it's hollow rock. I says, well, I wouldn't believe that. And I says, no, you wouldn't. Nobody else would. Because it's made from the mold of a rock. So it looks, has the same creases. And, you know. But I did have them put concrete on the inside so that you couldn't tap it. It wouldn't have that hollow sound. But anyway, a lot of the things that I talked to her about and the she, you know, certain plants where she's going to have such and such, aren't you, and this and that. And I said, yes, we will.
Particularly she's very knowledgeable.
She's knowledgeable. Oh, yeah. She's very, very astute about many things, and particularly the Oriental things. And she had a wonderful ivory collection in her house, and some other things that are just fabulous, you know, of Oriental.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese.
Well, I read that you went to Japan to study Japanese.
Mm-hmm. When we found out that we were going to be doing this, we had a son in Australia, and he was on a sailing his ship up to Malaysia, and so we were going to meet at Bali, and then after Bali, then we went to Japan and studied all the flora and fauna as much as we could.
Have you ever done a Japanese garden before?
No, never had. So by, it took, I don't know how many hundreds of photographs of details of this and that and that and that, and then reading the books and just poring over this for a long time to quell down, to get in that mode. And I kept telling everybody, I said, you know, I'm an Occident, I'm not a Japanese person at all. And I told Lorraine that. She says, you'll do all right. You know, she's happy. I said, maybe you ought to ask somebody else. And she says, no, you're going to do it. And so a lot of the details that are out there are taken from the photographs that we took.
I've been to Japan several times and seen some of the imperial gardens, mm-hmm. but strictly from a lay person's perspective. I wouldn't notice the details that you do. So when you're talking about Japanese garden and an overall composition, what are you saying that you have to have in a Japanese garden?
Well, it's got to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say there aren't surprises, but you're eased into things rather than hitting them face to face real quick. I don't know, but it's very informal. Even their formality has an informal look to it in certain times, I think. Proper, you just got to be, certain things just have to be. But peace and quiet and a contemplative place, even if it's only a pot with a sprig of bamboo, you know, that's how the setting is. That's the way I felt all the time over there, and that's what Lorraine wanted in this garden. She wanted a a place where people could get away and be alone with nature. And she just, that was her strong point on this. No clutter, no what's going on, you know. And so you could go there and show the cares of the world. And people have come up to me and said that it worked. So I don't know, with them anyway. Mm-hmm. And they get uptight, they go over there and sit for a while. So that's what really was about, I think.
Well, you've got certain components. You've got your water.
Mm-hmm.
So you made a lake.
Yeah, a lake, water, yeah, whatever. You don't have to have water, but you have to have the substitute of water in pebbles from a pebble path, screened up. Doesn't have that water in it. Rock are terribly important. That's a mysterious, mystic, religious experience with them.
Mm-hmm. The Japanese. Did Zen Buddhism influence on all this?
They're Zen as well. There are gardens that are just Zen gardens. And they're the extreme of quiet, plainness, peace, you know. And because nothing happens except that you see the islands coming out of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just one tree, that's all. But they're Japanese people have a great respect for nature and their heritage. The bend of a twig means something. And I'll admit most of it's beyond me, you know. I wasn't brought up that way. But I do appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so there are certain things you can do and can't do, I guess, you know. So,
You have the waterfalls, as well. In this garden, you have the waterfalls,
mm-hmm.
as well
mm-hmm.
as the lake.
Yes, yeah.
And with the lake, you've got koi. Is that always the case? There's always going to be koi?
They always have koi. They're carp.
Uh-huh.
And koi has gotten to be such a fine art that they're worth thousands of dollars now, you know. It's like showing off a champion poodle or something, you know, or a racehorse. It's there's strict rules on that.
So you knew at the beginning you were going to have koi.
Oh yeah, I'd have koi. Every place we went there was koi.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Besides that, they're fun. You know.
Yeah.
Pretty.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the plants that you put in there.
Well, pine and bamboo, of course. And then, well, there's such a wealth of material that has come from Japan. Originally, most of it from China, and then into Japan. But we have tons of plant material that originated from Japan. In fact, many plants are called Japonica. You know, the last name is, the botanical name is Japonica, you know, Ligustrum Japonica. Well, that's the Japanese pillar. And, so there are a lot of those that you would see over there, and I made, you know, they grow this, you know, the various palaces and gardens that are state gardens that are supposed to be authentic, gotta be. And so those things that we could use, we tried to use. So we've got the camellias, and we can't grow the Japanese iris very well, so we tried some other kind of iris and mountain iris. And the Japanese are not great for big displays of color, like the English
mm-hmm.
or the French. And so they wouldn't have big beds of petunias and things like that, but they might have a chrysanthemum by a rock. Yeah. Or if they raise chrysanthemums, they raise them to be the big, massive, dinner plate-sized flowers, and They're in a particular area just for that, with shade cloth and everything. But not out in the garden, not big lots of
Flowers.
No, none of that. And, but the pines mean so much to them, and bamboo, of course. And Lorraine has a quotation about the bamboo someplace. I don't know where, but it's in here. This isn't it. Someplace. But those are the important things that you look at. And the garden, hopefully, was to be, as it is over there, the garden is carved out of the forest. And so that you borrow views clear across the valley from your garden. That mountain is part of your garden.